Part 5. The Middle Ages. Chapter 12.
Where's the cave? Why are we in a field?
Joe didn't really understand everything that had happened, but he'd done enough time travelling by now to know that the cave would be close by.
It'll be around here somewhere.
Patrick had already started looking around for the entrance to the cave. They needed to rescue his dad and then figure out a way to put things back to normal. Mrs. Robinson was still very distressed about what they'd left behind back in 2022.
Those poor people with all those dinosaurs.
Don't worry, Mum,
said Lily, smiling encouragingly.
It hasn't happened yet. We can fix it.
Patrick had been continuing his search for the cave, and it didn't take long before he found an enormous clue.
It's Stonehenge!
The rest of the group ran over to meet him, and, sure enough, directly in front of Stonehenge was the entrance to the cave.
This is risky,
Joe told the rest of the group.
We always get caught whenever we enter this cave. We need to have a very quick look for the professor, and then figure out how to fix the future. And we need to be careful.
Agreeing with Joe, the group cautiously entered the cave and started walking nervously towards the central cavern. By now, they all knew the passages in this cave like the backs of their hands, and it didn't take long to get to their destination. The cave was empty. The main console had no blinking lights and showed no signs of life. It definitely looked like it was deserted. Suddenly, Joe remembered something he'd read in a book.
Darden lives on the surface in the Middle Ages. I saw it in my encyclopedia.
Whilst the rest of the group looked around the cave, searching for clues to help him find the professor, Patrick walked up to the main console. He still remembered how to work it, but it didn't seem to have any power at all.
It's only been a few hundred years since the Roman times,
he thought.
Maybe it hasn't obtained enough power from Stonehenge yet.
Mo was starting to feel a little more relaxed, and the emptiness of the cave was also making him feel a little braver. He approached a statue in one corner of the cave. It looked like a teenager.
It's so realistic,
he thought, before shouting out,
look at this!
The Robinsons heard this as,
Vidi hoc!
But Joe was on hand to translate. As everyone approached the realistic-looking statue, the Robinsons immediately began to smile. Joe stared at the statue and felt a sense of hope fill his body as his eyes started watering.
What's the matter?
Asked her, still very confused, Mo.
It's Max,
replied Joe, smiling widely. Joe ran over to the main console.
We have to figure out how to free him. Come on, Patrick, I need your help.
Patrick looked at the console and its vast array of buttons.
I don't know where to start. Dad and I only figured out how to open a portal.
Joe thought for a moment before asking Patrick,
which buttons didn't you and your dad use when you both figured out how to use the console?
Patrick noticed a button that he was confident had nothing to do with time travel.
We didn't use this one.
Are you sure?
Slowly and cautiously, Joe pressed the button. The console immediately came to life, and the same strip of light that they'd seen back in the Roman times shone out from the dashboard. This beam of light moved immediately in the direction of Max, and as the light touched the statue, the rock started breaking off. Within seconds, the statue was no more. It had been replaced by a fully living, fully breathing Max.
Thank you,
gasped Max.
How long was I stuck like that?
Joe ran over to him and gave him a hug.
It's been a while.
The group provided Max with an explanation of everything that had happened whilst he'd been out of action. Max soon realised that there were language difficulties within the group and pulled out a handful of lingua worm eggs from his pocket.
You want me to put that in my ear?
Asked Mo. raising his eyebrows.
Yes, you'll be able to understand what the Robinsons are saying.
Reluctantly, Mo put the egg in his ear.
Say something, please.
Hi, Mo.
Mo smiled. He could finally understand English.
We need to get out of here and find the professor. I promise we'll be able to fix everything.
Joe took the trekker out of his pocket.
Let's use this. We found it in a pit in 2022. I'm not sure how it got there.
Max took the trekker from Joe, and when he held it out, he saw that a destination had already been programmed into it. He pressed the button on the handle, and the image of a small village appeared on the glass, just as a portal appeared in front of the group. They all entered, and with a flash of light, they found themselves standing in a medieval town.
How far have we travelled?
Not far. This trekker is old. It hasn't got that much power left. I would think that we are less than 10 miles from the cave.
The village appeared to be traditionally medieval. It looked just like the pictures and films of medieval places that Joe, Mo, and the Robinsons had seen.
We need to find some different clothes,
suggested Max as he looked at what they were wearing.
We seemed very out of place in the Roman times. We'll stand out way too much dressed like this.
The others agreed as they glanced at their surroundings. The village was quiet, but it didn't seem to be deserted.
It's early,
observed Joe.
Everybody must be asleep.
The group looked around for some clothes they could borrow. Fortunately, there were plenty of clothes that had been hung up to dry on nearby washing lines.
We'll return these later,
said Max, taking down some tunics and trousers. They quickly changed, leaving their own clothes safely hidden under a small bridge, and then decided to head further into the village, just as the sound of a crowing cockerel reached their ears.
This is amazing,
exclaimed a now thoroughly excited Mo.
I can't believe I'm here.
He was taking in every single sight with a kind of wide-eyed wonder.
Doesn't smell very nice, though,
said Lily, with a sick feeling in her mouth. The streets were full of rubbish. There was also a lot of farm animals seemingly living wild in the town.
Watch your step,
warned Patrick, just as Lily stood in something quite disgusting.
Gross!
They were still making their way into the centre of the village when they all noticed something very interesting. There were pictures of Verissimus all over the walls. These pictures, however, had been covered in graffiti and extremely rude language. Joe recalled what he'd read in the encyclopedia.
There were attempted revolts against the Order of Verissimus in the Middle Ages,
he informed his friends.
The people in this place must be involved in one of those revolts.
Max looked at one of the posters.
We are definitely in the right place. We should be able to find some friends here.
What about my husband?
Asked Mrs. Robinson.
We'll find him,
Max promised her as he walked towards a small tavern that was just opening its doors for the day.
Let's go in here.
The group headed in and sat down.
What will we be able to buy in a medieval cafe? We don't have any money.
Max explained that they weren't there to buy food. They were there to gather information.
This village hates Verissimus. That means they are our friends.
A moment later, a young man walked in and sat down at a table on the other side of the cafe. He was dressed like a knight.
I can't believe it. It's a real knight.
Max got up from the table and walked over to the young knight before sitting down and starting to talk. The rest of the group, who were unable to hear what was being said, could only wait in anticipation. A few minutes later, Max returned to the table. He wasn't alone. The knight had accompanied him.
This is a friend. He's been fighting the armies of Verissimus for many months now, and wants to help us,
explained Max. Joe looked at the knight.
Nice to meet you. I'm Joe.
The knight stared at the unusual group assembled before him.
Nice to meet you all,
he said in a deep, booming voice.
My name is Arthur of Camelot.
Mo nearly fell out of his chair.
Arthur, King of Camelot?
He shouted in excitement. Arthur gave Mo a puzzled look.
I'm not a king,
he said.
The ruler of Camelot is a man called the Professor.
The Robinsons exchanged worried glances, understanding that they had to head for Camelot.
Who is this Professor?
Asked Mrs. Robinson.
Nobody knows,
replied Arthur.
He appeared from nowhere, and the Order of Verissimus immediately put him in charge. He runs a very brutal regime. Camelot is now a dangerous place.
We have to go there,
pleaded Patrick.
Please,
added Lily. Max agreed and asked Arthur to guide them.
Of course,
Arthur replied.
We'll take back Camelot first, and then the rest of this land as well.
Mo couldn't stop grinning.
What's up with you?
Asked Lily.
It's King Arthur,
replied Mo, practically bouncing up and down in his chair.
This is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to enjoy being a time traveller.
It's a long way to Camelot,
said Arthur, ignoring the puzzling words coming out of Mo's mouth.
We need to leave immediately.
Max agreed and told the rest of the group to get ready for the journey.
How long will it take?
It's a long way,
repeated Arthur.
And there will be many dangers. We will have to try to avoid the armies of Verissimus, as well as the flocks of birds that hunt in the areas we will be passing through.
Joe had forgotten about the pterodactyls.
Oh yeah, the birds.
The group left the tavern and started on their journey to Camelot, walking without incident until the sun began to go down.
It will be safer to head into the forest and set up camp,
Arthur informed them.
It's not safe to be out at night. The birds are very active in this area after dark.
Nobody was going to disagree with Arthur of Camelot, so they all headed into the forest. Max and Arthur looked for a safe place to set up camp whilst the rest of the group waited patiently under a large oak tree. Mo was still feeling incredibly excited about the situation he'd found himself in, and he still couldn't believe they were going to Camelot with King Arthur. Joe, on the other hand, was feeling very confused.
How do you know the legend of King Arthur? In your timeline, there was no King Arthur. The Order of Verissimus has been in control of the whole world since the Roman times, right?
Mo looked at Joe with an expression of bemusement.
Of course there was a King Arthur. He was the King of Camelot. It was once the only place in the world that was not ruled by the Order of Verissimus. It only became part of the Order after King Arthur died of old age and the people of Camelot surrendered. In my timeline, the Professor was not the ruler of Camelot.
Joe and the Robinsons exchanged concerned glances. They were all extremely concerned, as it was now clear that even the timeline Mo came from was changing.
We need to fix this and put everything back to normal.
Mrs. Robinson agreed.
We need to recover our timeline. That's the correct one.
Joe, Lily and Patrick nodded in agreement. Mo, however, was not so convinced. He now realised that, as a time traveller, changes to the timeline would not affect him personally. He would stay the same. If the world went back to normal, he would be stuck in a country that spoke English, whereas he could only speak Latin. Without the permanent help of a lingua worm, he wouldn't be able to speak to or understand anyone. It sounded terrible. He decided to keep these thoughts to himself. Max and Arthur returned to the rest of the group, having found a safe place to camp for the night. Arthur had already lit a fire, and the group sat around the flames to keep warm. Earlier, when they were in the tavern, they had thought ahead and taken some bread, so now they were able to have a simple, but much appreciated, meal. After they'd eaten, they lay down on the floor and, due to exhaustion, quickly fell asleep. A couple of hours later, Joe woke suddenly. Something was approaching. He looked around, but in the pitch blackness of the woods, he couldn't see anything. He rubbed his eyes and slowly, they adjusted to the darkness. From out of the gloom, he heard a twig break.
What's that?
Asked an also now awake Mo.
I'm not sure,
whispered Joe. It wasn't long before they could both see what was approaching, and it was a sight that made Joe's blood run cold. Scrambling to his feet, Joe shouted out as loud as he could.
It's a bear!
Monty!
Arthur shouted excitably as the large brown bear ran towards him.
Monty?
Asked a confused Mo.
Yes, he's my best friend. We've known each other since he was a cub. He accompanies me on all my adventures. He's been hiding in the woods, where it's safer.
And now, wide-awake Mrs. Robinson looked angrily at Arthur.
You could have warned us.
I'm sorry,
replied Arthur rather sheepishly.
I was going to introduce you all to him tomorrow. He must have gotten too excited. We can all go back to sleep. Monty will keep us safe.
As Joe and the group settled back down to go to sleep, they all felt a little safer, knowing Monty was watching over them. Chapter 13. The next morning, Lily and Patrick were the first to wake up. Cautiously, they approached Monty, who was lying down in the middle of the group.
Hello, Monty. My name is Lily, and this is my brother Patrick.
Monty opened his eyes and looked at the Robinson twins.
Good morning.
Monty sat up and held out his paws.
He wants to shake your hands,
said Arthur, who'd just woken up. Lily and Patrick glanced at each other and then back at Monty. They each held out a hand and Monty reached out and took hold of them in his paws. He then pulled the twins towards him and hugged them both.
He likes you,
said Arthur with a smile. Lily giggled. She'd never been hugged by a bear before. Joe and Mo immediately ran over to Monty and held out their hands. After letting Lily and Patrick go, Monty gave them a hug too.
It's so nice to see them happy. This has been a very strange and upsetting time for us,
Mrs. Robinson said to Arthur.
The Order of Verissimus has caused so much heartache,
Arthur replied, shaking his head.
When we get to Camelot, we will fix everything, once and for all.
I hope you're right,
sighed Mrs. Robinson. Max was standing at the edge of the campsite, watching everything that was going on. He knew he needed to fix this. He was fully aware that the disruption to the timeline had everything to do with him and Dardan. But while he was feeling guilty about that, he also felt positive about the mission ahead. He shouted to the group.
Let's go. The sooner we arrive in Camelot, the sooner we can all get home.
After breakfast, the group packed up their things and set off on the next stage of their big adventure. By now, Mo and Monty had become very close. They were so close, in fact, that Monty was letting Mo ride him.
This is amazing! Much better than riding a horse.
Does Monty mind?
Mrs. Robinson asked Arthur.
Not at all,
he replied, smiling at the sight of Mo and Monty.
How much further is Camelot?
Inquired Joe.
It's still a very long way,
said Arthur.
It would take many days to walk there.
Max, Joe, Mrs. Robinson and the twins suddenly felt much less optimistic.
Many days?
Repeated Lily.
Yes. However, fear not. We are not walking all the way there.
Stop!
Shouted Max. The group stopped. Mo and Monty, who were ahead of the rest of the group, turned around and came back to join the others.
Arthur, explain yourself,
demanded Max. Arthur leant against a stump along the side of the road.
I was going to surprise you.
Max was getting angrier.
We've had enough unpleasant surprises recently. Tell us now.
Did you really think that I walked for days every time I visited other parts of the country? The Order of Verissimus has very advanced ways of moving around. We are going to use their machine. It's only a couple of hours away.
Despite this development, Max decided that he could still trust Arthur.
Okay. Let's carry on.
They continued their walk for another 2 hours, during which they didn't see any other people. This hadn't gone unnoticed by the group.
Where is everyone?
People very rarely leave the towns and villages. They fear the birds.
But we haven't seen any birds,
Patrick pointed out.
Or any soldiers,
added Lily.
That is unusual,
agreed Arthur.
Although the soldiers do tend to stay in the towns, I guarantee you we will see plenty of them in Camelot, and the birds mainly hunt at night.
He pointed to their left.
We need to head into the forest now. That's where the machine is.
The group followed Arthur into the forest, and after a short walk among the trees, they came across a clearing. Max looked at the middle of the clearing in disbelief.
That's it,
he exclaimed. Max and Joe immediately recognised the machine. It was an enormous trekker. Max and Joe ran towards the giant trekker, which looked like a huge magnifying glass and was approximately half the size of Joe's house.
This is enormous. It can transport so many people through this. It's no wonder they were able to take over the world. Have you seen one this big before?
Max studied it carefully.
No, I've never seen one this big before. They don't exist like this on my planet.
The rest of the group joined Max and Joe at the trekker.
How does it work?
Asked Mo. Arthur walked over to the small console that sat directly under the trekker.
You write the name of your destination here, and it appears in the glass. Then we just walk through.
How many of these things are there?
There are hundreds. It's how the armies of Verissimus move around. This one, though, seems to have been deserted. I've used it many times without being caught, but we need to wait until nightfall to use it. The other machine we're going to use in Camelot is in the centre of the city. We will get caught if we go through during the day.
Whilst most of the group sat down and rested, Max continued to study the giant trekker. He was both confused and concerned about where the technology had come from.
Did these machines exist in your version of 2022?
He asked Mo.
Not that I'm aware of.
The timeline seems to be changing every time we travel,
pondered Max. Joe, Mo, Lily and Patrick were running around with Monty, and for the first time in days, they were having fun. Before long, the sun started to go down.
Let's get ready to go,
said Arthur. The group all approached the console, and Arthur typed the word Camelot into the keyboard. Immediately, the enormous trekker started to hum, and an image slowly started appearing in the glass.
There she is. The beautiful city of Camelot, capital of the Kingdom of Logres.
Max pulled the group together.
We don't know what to expect when we get to Camelot. But no matter what, remember, we have two objectives. One, rescue the professor. Two, find a time portal and fix everything.
With everyone in agreement, the group walked towards the image of Camelot in the glass and then stepped through. The journey was instantaneous. They walked straight out of the other side of the glass right into the centre of Camelot. The city was dominated by an enormous castle that took up most of the skyline.
That's Camelot Castle,
said Mo.
It used to be,
Arthur corrected him.
Now it's called Castle Dardan. It is very big with a complicated network of caverns underneath.
Max, Joe and the Robinsons looked at each other. They were all feeling a strange sense of déjà vu. Mo frowned.
It was never called Castle Dardan in my history lessons,
he thought.
Let's go somewhere safe,
suggested Arthur.
Fortunately, I have many friends here.
The group moved quickly away from the trekker and into the network of alleyways. Before long, they arrived at a house.
This house is empty,
said Arthur, before opening the door.
Come in.
The group entered the house and sat down in the small living quarters.
Let's get some sleep so that we are ready for our mission tomorrow.
The rest of the group was so tired that this seemed like a very good idea. It also felt like a safe place to rest, so they agreed to get some sleep. Arthur was right. They would need all their energy and strength to face whatever tomorrow brought. The next morning, the group were woken with a start by a loud sound coming from outside. It was the sound of trumpets. This was followed by the collective chanting of something much more sinister and familiar to most of the group.
We are happy, we are happy, we are happy. We are grateful to our beloved leader for his kindness. We put our faith in the order of Verissimus.
What is that?
I'll take this,
said Mo, turning to face Max and getting ready to explain.
That is the daily mantra that everybody chants to show their support for the Order of Verissimus. I've been doing it my whole life. I hadn't really thought about how weird it was until I met you lot.
Do people have a choice?
No,
replied Arthur.
Anyone who is caught not taking part is taken away and never seen again.
Max looked directly at Arthur.
Why didn't we see this in the village where we met? Are the people there not scared of getting caught?
Yes, they are scared. The armies of Verissimus do sometimes enter that village, but the villagers have managed to stay strong.
Max was starting to get angry.
We must fix this. Dardan and I have caused so many problems here.
It's not your fault. You tried to stop him.
The group gathered around Max and reassured him that they did not hold him in any way responsible. This calmed Max down. By now, the mantra had stopped and Monty had joined the group.
It's time,
said Arthur.
It's only a 10-minute walk to the castle, but there will be lots of soldiers along the way. Once we get control of the castle, my friends will be ready to take back Camelot. We just need to figure out how we're going to get into the castle.
I have a plan,
said Joe. Chapter 14. It was a bright and sunny January morning in Camelot. It was a little bit chilly, but not too cold, and the citizens of the city were just starting their day. The traders were setting up stalls to sell their wares, and shoppers were waiting patiently to purchase their favourite items. There didn't seem to be anything strange about the small group of newcomers walking through the centre of the city and towards the castle. Arthur was well known within the city, and as such was wearing a hood on top of his chainmail suit. It was usual for knights to wear hoods and chainmail in Camelot, so he was able to blend in easily. There was also nothing unusual about a young boy riding a bear through the market square. What with all the rumours of wizards about, there had definitely been stranger sights in Camelot.
Lovely morning, isn't it?
One of the traders asked the group.
Can I interest you in my lovely fruits?
Approaching the stall, the group looked at the variety of fruits on display.
An English market in the Middle Ages should not be selling such exotic fruits,
thought Joe, as he picked up a kiwi fruit and ran away.
Stop! Thief!
Shouted the trader. In an instant, the flying armies of Verissimus descended upon the crime scene. The market square was now total chaos. All the traders had abandoned their stalls and were chasing the young thief and his accomplices. Monty and Mo ran down an alleyway, becoming separated from the rest of the group. They tried to find their way back to the market square, but Mo quickly realised that they were completely lost. They attempted to retrace their steps, but the alleyways were like a maze. Before long, they had even lost sight of the castle.
Where are we?
Mo asked as he jumped off Monty's back.
We've let everyone else down. How are they going to be able to take control of the castle without your help?
He said to Monty. Slowly and cautiously, the two friends continued walking deeper into the web of alleys and back streets. After a moment, Monty ran off towards a house at the end of the alley.
Don't leave me,
pleaded Mo as he chased after the bear. He ran as fast as he could, but by the time he reached the end of the alley, Monty was nowhere to be seen.
How can this be happening?
He whispered to himself, before shouting out,
Monty!
Shh!
Who was that?
Asked Mo, glancing around. He couldn't see anyone.
It's me,
came the reply.
Who's me?
Asked Mo, feeling more confused than ever. A figure appeared from the house at the end of the alley. Mo couldn't see his face, but he could see he was wearing dark clothes with a large hood over his head.
Merlin.
Meanwhile, back in the market square, the rest of the group were standing in the centre of the market with their hands up.
We surrender!
The leader of the army regiment hovered down to the ground and approached the group.
This is very serious,
he shouted.
The Order of Verissimus does not tolerate theft. You will be taken to the castle. You will answer to the professor.
Having not realised that they'd lost Mo and Monty, Joe looked at the group and smiled.
It worked,
he thought.
Merlin,
stuttered Mo.
I see you've met my bear.
Merlin, the wizard.
Merlin raised his eyebrows, looking surprised.
There's no such thing as wizards. Please, come inside.
Cautiously, Mo entered the small house. Monty was waiting for him in the main room. He held out his paw.
Why did you run off?
Mo asked angrily. In response, Monty grabbed Mo and embraced him tightly.
Where have you come from?
Merlin asked him. Mo had to think carefully about his answer. He didn't think it would be a good idea to tell a stranger, even if he did have the same name as a mythical wizard, that he was a time traveller from the future. He also wasn't sure whether this friendly-looking old man was a supporter of Verissimus.
I've travelled from a long distance to see the wonders of Camelot,
said Mo, after thinking for a moment.
With my bear?
Responded Merlin.
Do you know Arthur of Camelot?
Mo wasn't sure how to reply to this. Was it a trap? He looked to Monty for guidance. In response, the bear stood up on his hind legs, reached for Merlin and gave him a hug. This instantly reassured Mo.
Yes, I know Arthur. I've come here with my friends to defeat the Order of Verissimus. But I think my friends have been captured and taken to the castle. Arthur is with them.
A noble cause, replied Merlin. But how are you going to help your friends?
I don't know,
admitted Mo. Merlin gestured for Mo to sit down.
Let me tell you a story.
Merlin explained that he'd been working with Arthur and a group of rebels to overthrow the Order of Verissimus. He explained that Arthur was the rightful ruler of Camelot and the Kingdom of Logres.
It is his birthright. We have been fighting against this evil for most of our lives. It was part of Arthur's plan to bring you here. I'm sorry we didn't tell you, but Monty brought you here intentionally.
Why?
Asked the slightly annoyed Mo.
We needed to make sure that you and Monty were not captured. You are both needed to help us liberate Camelot,
replied Merlin.
How?
Asked Mo, now utterly confused.
Look outside.
Mo opened the front door and looked out into the alley and saw a most amazing sight. Wow! He thought as he looked upon what must have been at least 100 knights.
This is our army. Now we just need to wait for a signal.
Where have they gone?
Screamed Dardan. He approached the main console and frantically attempted to check the destination of the last portal that had been opened. He suspected that they'd gone back to the Middle Ages, as that was the last destination saved in the console memory.
What is wrong with this thing?
He shouted, pressing buttons and getting no response. Desperately, he started looking for the problem. His monitors were showing that all the portals that he had been releasing dinosaurs into the 21st century had now closed. Though he could also see that thousands of dinosaurs had indeed passed through the portals before they'd closed.
What have they done? They've ruined my plan. Never mind,
he said to himself after taking a deep breath.
There are more than enough dinosaurs to take back this miserable planet. Most of the humans will soon be gone, and then I will call upon the rest of the Wolfian race to destroy the dinosaurs and colonize Earth!
He let out a loud howl.
Oh!
Before noticing the main console was now not responding at all. Portal light had stopped blinking. Staring at the static light, Dardan realised what had happened. He realised that someone, Max, Joe or Patrick, had removed the portal energizer chip. He was trapped in 2022.
I'm stuck here. I can't travel in time or contact my Wolfian compatriots!
He shouted out into the cavern. The only thing left was to hope that the professor in the Middle Ages could defeat Max and his friends. Chapter 15. The inside of Castle Dardan was extremely grand. Expensive and exotic antiquities from all around the world were displayed throughout the main areas of the castle. And the castle itself was surrounded by a deep moat. In order to access it, a large drawbridge had to be lowered over the water. Max, Joe, Arthur, and the Robinsons were being led through a grand corridor. The guards were armed with swords and longbows, so the group knew that an attempt to escape would be very foolish.
Where are you taking us?
Asked Mrs. Robinson.
Keep quiet,
responded one of the guards.
We demand an audience with the professor.
Alt!
Shouted the head guard, turning to face Max.
Who do you think you are? The professor doesn't waste his time with common thieves.
He's our dad!
Shouted Patrick and Lily in unison.
Your father?
Exclaimed a shocked Arthur.
Why didn't you tell me?
Quiet! Enough with this foolishness.
The guards continued leading the prisoners towards the end of the corridor, at which point they stopped in front of a large stone door. The head guard pulled on a rope that was hanging next to the door. A second later, a bell could be heard ringing in the room beyond.
You've seen the nicest parts of the castle. Now, you'll see the worst parts,
said the head guard, smirking.
We always bring prisoners this way so they can see amazing wonders they will never be able to have.
The stone door opened, and the prisoners were led down a steep staircase into the basement area of the castle. It was dark, damp, and smelly.
Welcome to your new home!
Laughed the head guard as he pushed the prisoners into a small cell.
Enjoy!
What now?
Asked Patrick once the guard had left.
Don't worry, this is all part of the plan. Be patient. I asked you to ask for your dad for a reason. We won't be here long.
I'm annoyed that you didn't tell me about that. But I understand why you didn't.
Wait,
said Joe, looking around the group.
Where's Mo?
He must have got away and hidden somewhere,
said Arthur.
Possibly with Monty?
Joe groaned. He didn't like thinking about his friend being out there all alone in this strange land.
If he's with Monty,
Arthur said gently,
he'll be fine.
Reluctantly, Joe nodded. It wasn't as if he could do anything about it now. Not from inside this cell, anyway. Patrick decided that now was the right time to tell the rest of the group that he'd sabotaged Darden's main console back in 2022.
So, Darden can't travel anywhere. He's trapped in his cave. He can't risk going outside because of the dinosaurs.
He took the portal energizer chip out of his pocket.
I took this during all the chaos in the cave. As long as we have it, the portal to the Middle Ages is the last one that will be opened. Darden won't be following us here.
Can't he just make another chip?
Asked Lily.
Impossible. The technology only exists on Proxima Centauri B.
Having listened to this strange conversation and taken everything in, Arthur was more confused than ever.
Are you telling me that you all come from the future?
He asked. Max decided it was time to tell Arthur the full story, and everyone else agreed. So, the prisoners passed the time by telling the story of their travels through time, and, before long, they heard footsteps approaching. These footsteps stopped directly outside the cell, and moments later, they heard the unmistakable sound of a key entering a lock.
Here we go,
proclaimed Max.
What's our plan then?
Asked Mo as he looked out at the horde of knights gathered in the alleyway.
We wait for a signal,
replied an exasperated Merlin.
I've just told you that.
Mo moved away from the door and sat down next to Monty on the floor of the main room.
You know, most people think you're a magician or a wizard.
Merlin sighed.
As I told you, there is no such thing as a wizard.
Suddenly, a loud squawking sound came from outside. Instantly, the knights all reached for their longbows, aiming them upwards.
No one is going to harm those birds,
ordered Merlin, walking over to the front door. The knights returned the longbows to the carriers on their backs.
These are not the type of birds you are familiar with.
Mo ran to the door and looked up. Merlin was right. These birds looked completely different. They had much bigger heads and they looked far more powerful than the birds he was used to.
What are they?
Asked Mo.
Transport,
replied Merlin. The birds landed in the alleyway. There was precisely one bird for every knight.
These birds are our friends,
announced Merlin.
You will each partner up with one and fly into the sky. It is completely safe.
Are you sure?
Shouted one of the knights, sounding nervous.
They look vicious. Is it really safe?
Yes,
replied Merlin calmly.
They are my friends.
The nervous knights each sat on a bird, and one by one, they took off. Mo had seen some strange sights over the past few days, but this was definitely the most awesome.
Why are they helping us?
Asked Mo. Merlin looked at Mo and winked.
Perhaps I do know some magic.
I knew it,
laughed Mo.
I've never seen that type of bird before, though. Where did they come from?
I'm not sure,
Merlin admitted.
They only exist in Camelot. I've been training them with food for a while now. I seem to have gained their trust so much that my knights are now able to fly safely with them.
Mo looked up again. The birds and knights were nowhere to be seen.
They will be waiting for the same signal we are,
Merlin told him.
Just relax. We have some time to wait.
Mo sat down in front of the fire next to the bear. He couldn't pretend he wasn't nervous, but he knew that Monty would protect him. He was also convinced that Merlin was a wizard. How else could he control those birds? Monty was sleeping, and as Mo was feeling tired now too, he closed his eyes. As the fire burned cozily in the corner of the room, he drifted slowly off to sleep.
Come with us,
ordered the guard who was standing at the now open cell door. A group of friends exited the cell and followed the guard back up the stairs that led to the main part of the castle.
Remember, don't get too emotional,
Max said to the Robinsons.
We need to stick to the plan.
Mrs. Robinson and the twins nodded in response, their expressions a mix of nerves and excitement. After a short walk through the castle, they arrived at a large, ornate door.
Wait,
ordered the guard as he knocked on the door. It didn't take long before the door opened, revealing another guard on the other side.
I'll take them,
he said to guard number one. On the other side of the door, there was another steep staircase, and displayed on the walls of this staircase were pictures of Dardan, Verissimus, and the twins' dad. As they approached the top of the staircase, they could hear a familiar voice.
It's Dad!
Exclaimed Lily. By now, the Robinsons were getting extremely nervous. They had heard horrible stories about the Professor from Arthur, including all the terrible things he'd done.
He's being controlled,
Patrick kept telling himself.
We can make him better.
At the top of the stairs, they entered a large room. It was enormous and luxurious with dark windows. In the middle of the room was a large, round table.
Follow me,
said the guard. They walked past the round table, and as they approached the end of the room, they could see a familiar figure. He was looking out of the window, facing in the opposite direction.
It's Dad!
Shouted Patrick as he ran in front of the guard.
Come back!
Ordered the guard.
It's okay,
said the figure at the end of the room.
You may leave us.
If you insist, sir.
The guard replied as he left the room through a side door. Slowly, the figure at the end of the room started turning round.
It's very good to see you all again. It's been far too long.
Max, Joe and the Robinsons couldn't believe what they were seeing. The man standing in front of them was indeed the Professor, but he was much older than the Professor they knew. He was at least 70 years of age.
This must be very confusing for you,
he said.
But it's been 30 years since I last saw you all.
Chapter 16.
What?
Stuttered Patrick as Mrs. Robinson and Lily burst into tears.
I don't understand,
said Mrs. Robinson. The Professor looked at his family and smiled.
Have you already forgotten how confusing time travel can be? I was brought to Camelot 30 years ago. I've been the supreme ruler since then. The portal brought you to the right place. But it was 30 years out.
We've come to rescue you, Dad,
said Lily quietly. The Professor laughed.
Why would I need rescuing?
Max took a step towards the Professor.
Where are Dardan and Verissimus?
The Professor explained that they occasionally visited to check how things were, but that most of the time he was left to rule Camelot alone.
What are you going to do with us?
Asked Mrs. Robinson, still shocked at seeing her husband looking 30 years older.
Nothing. I'm glad that we're all together again. You'll stay here in the castle.
Patrick and Lily exchanged nervous glances. It was good to see their dad again, but not like this.
How can you understand what people are saying?
Asked Max.
The lingua worm I gave you would have crawled out decades ago.
Good question,
responded the Professor.
It was difficult, but I had to learn Latin. It took a couple of years to be fluent. I will teach you all how to speak it once your worms have expired.
All of us?
The Professor looked directly at Joe.
I'm afraid not. You, Max, and Arthur are not family. You will be executed in the morning.
A half-smile appeared on his lips as he stared into the distance.
Oh, I do love a good execution.
As Joe started to panic, four guards appeared from a hidden door.
Take these three traitors away,
ordered the Professor.
No!
Shouted Patrick and Lily in unison.
Fear not,
shouted Arthur as he pulled out what looked like a wand from one of his shoes.
This is all part of the plan.
Arthur pointed the wand at the guards and they immediately turned to ice.
They'll be okay,
Arthur told the rest of the group.
Once the ice defrosts, they'll be absolutely fine again.
He then pointed the wand at the Professor.
Dad!
Shouted Patrick as he looked at the now completely frozen Professor.
I've known who you all were all along,
Arthur explained to the group.
I was sent to meet you by Merlin. You were the only way we could get an audience with the professor. Don't worry, we're going to make him better.
Arthur approached the professor and asked Max to join him.
We need to remove the thing that is controlling him.
For a few moments, Max studied the frozen professor.
That's easy,
he said, reaching out and removing a bracelet that was on his right wrist.
We need to destroy this.
Before anyone could say anything in response, Patrick ran over to Max, took hold of the bracelet and threw it to the ground. Lily and Mrs. Robinson quickly ran over to the bracelet and began stamping on it for good measure.
It must be completely destroyed so that the power Dad and had over your dad is removed forever,
explained Max. Within a couple of minutes, there was nothing left of the bracelet. The remains had been thrown onto the fire at the far end of the room.
It's time to call for reinforcements,
declared Arthur as he held his wand aloft.
Wake up,
said Merlin.
It's time.
Mo opened his eyes and looked at Merlin.
I thought this had all been a dream,
he said sleepily.
It's time that we defeat the forces of evil once and for all. The knights will already be approaching the castle from the air.
He paused, staring at Mo for a second.
Can you keep a secret?
Yes,
replied Mo.
I am a wizard,
admitted Merlin, pulling out a wand from inside his cloak.
Let's go,
he shouted as a flash of light appeared from the tip of the wand. The room started to spin, and within a few seconds, Mo, Merlin and Monty found themselves in the same room as Max and the others.
Mo, you're okay?
A dizzy and confused Mo didn't answer. He just fell to the floor.
He'll be okay in a minute or two,
said Merlin. A squawking sound could be heard coming from outside.
Here come the reinforcements,
said Arthur. Joe looked out of a now clear window to see an incredible sight. A whole army of knights were arriving in the castle grounds on what looked like large flying dinosaurs. They certainly had the element of surprise, and the knights quickly took control of the castle.
We're winning!
Joe shrieked as he watched the battle below.
Good. Now, we need to get back to the Cretaceous period. We have to stop Dardan from stealing the pyramids and gaining the power to transport his Trudon army.
What about my dad? He's old.
Time travel is complicated. If you're going to put things back to normal, then only Joe and I can go back. Everyone who's at Time Ground Zero will stay exactly as they are. That means that Mo will only be able to speak Latin, and your dad will stay as a 70-year-old man.
Will we remember anything at all?
Asked Mrs. Robinson.
I'm afraid not. It's the only way.
This is the only way.
A quiet voice repeated from the end of the room.
Dad!
Shouted Lily and Patrick together as they ran over to hug the professor.
I'm sorry for everything I've done,
said the professor, tears filling his eyes as he hugged his children.
I don't want to remember any of the terrible things I've been involved in. This is the only way.
Mrs. Robinson and the twins nodded sadly.
You'll need to get back to Darden's cave. I'll arrange for this to happen immediately.
He looked at Arthur.
You are the rightful ruler of Camelot. This will also be announced immediately.
I'm sorry, but you will need to be imprisoned for all the evil things you've done. I know it wasn't your fault, but you won't be safe in Camelot if I let you leave.
The professor nodded.
I agree,
he said quietly before looking at Max and Joe.
You'll need this.
He went over to a drawer and pulled out a trekker.
This will get you back to the cave.
Thank you,
said Joe, getting a little emotional.
Yes, this trekker will be very useful indeed.
Max and Joe said their final goodbyes, and then it was the turn of the Robinsons.
We'll never see you again,
said Mrs. Robinson with tears in her eyes. Lily and Patrick each gave Max and Joe a hug as they said goodbye. Finally, Mo approached Joe.
I hope you can fix this. Otherwise, I'll be stuck here forever. Hopefully, I'll see you at school soon.
You will?
Said Joe, smiling.
But you won't believe any of this happened.
It's been a pleasure.
said King Arthur, holding out his hand and shaking everyone else's in turn.
Good luck.
Let's go,
said Max, as he held the trekker out in front of him. Within seconds, the image of Dardan's cave had appeared in the glass. The cave was just as deserted as when they'd left it. The console still didn't have any blinking lights on its dashboard.
How are we going to get this thing working?
With this,
replied Max, as he pulled the portal energizer chip out of his pocket.
Remember that Patrick took it from the console in 2022. It's risky, though, because when I put this back, it will also be in the 2022 console.
He leaned over, studying the dashboard.
The chip that's already here needs repairing. This is much easier.
Joe suddenly remembered something.
Before you do that, we need to leave the trekker in the pit.
Of course. Good thinking.
After they'd left the trekker in the pit, they headed back to the console. Max removed the faulty energizer chip and replaced it with the one from 2022.
Here we go again,
said Max as the cave started to shake. The portal appeared in front of them, and cautiously, they walked through.